Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Wednesday, March 20th, 2024. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. The headline at the top of the page is NICC Faculty Voice Support for President by Elizabeth Kelsey. Dozens of Northeast Iowa Community College faculty members have voted their support for the college's president, who remains on administrative leave as he prepares to contest his termination at a hearing later this month. 40 faculty members from across the college's campuses recently submitted a statement of confidence to the college's Board of Trustees defending Herbert Riedel's, quote, competence and effectiveness, unquote, as NICC's president. Riedel was placed on paid administrative leave by the college's Board of Trustees on October 9th, and board members unanimously voted to proceed with termination procedures on November 20th. Riedel requested a private hearing to determine whether there was just cause for his termination and has remained on paid administrative leave since then. In the statement of confidence, the faculty members wrote that Riedel had shown, quote, competence and effectiveness in his interactions with them. Dr. Riedel consistently demonstrated a deep commitment to fostering a positive and collaborative relationship with the faculty, the statement reads. Through his transparent communication style, approachability, and interest in understanding the needs and concerns of faculty members, Dr. Riedel has earned our trust. The statement also asserts that Riedel made diligent efforts to improve long-standing issues and credits him with helping reverse a 7-year declining enrollment trend. NICC's enrollment, after declining annually since at least 2014, ticked slightly upward in the fall of 2021, followed by 4% and 0.8% year-over-year enrollment increases in the fall of 22 and 23. Riedel became NICC president in July of 2022. Additionally, faculty members wrote that Riedel helped expand NICC's athletics program, initiated an administrative restructuring, and hired new leaders for the college's student services and business and community solutions departments through transparent, fair, and inclusive hiring practices. We ask for an independent review of the disciplinary actions and policies of the Board of Trustees and Human Resources related to the evaluation, suspension, and termination of Dr. Riedel to ensure a fair resolution for all parties involved and impacted, the statement concludes. The 40 faculty members who signed the statement of confidence represent about 14% of the college's 285 total faculty members, which includes 136 full-time, 30 part-time, and 119 adjunct faculty members, according to Tara Cooley, Public Relations and Social Media Manager for NICC. The college has a total of 530 employees. Carson Bohr, an electrical instructor at the college's Kalmar campus, said he signed the statement of confidence based on Riedel's efforts to form a positive relationship with the faculty in the electrical program. As president, he actually came out to our programs and spoke to us personally and had relationships with us, Bohr said when contacted by the Telegraph Herald on Tuesday. In an emailed statement to the Telegraph Herald, NICC officials wrote that NICC's focus remains on its commitment to its mission and student experience, and it does not publicly comment on personnel matters. Since the board's vote to begin termination proceedings, Riedel has filed a lawsuit against the NICC Board of Trustees, alleging the board violated Iowa's Open Meetings Act by implementing a performance action plan for Riedel during a closed session on June 19th. NICC officials have said they plan to defend the college against those allegations. Riedel also filed complaints against the college and board members with the Iowa Department of Education, Iowa Ethics and Campaign Disclosure Board, and Higher Learning Commission, though the commission deemed that the issue in his complaint, quote, do not indicate substantive noncompliance, unquote, with the HLC standards and would not be investigated further. Those complaints and previous statements by Riedel indicate the growing tensions between Riedel and board members during his tenure as president. Riedel expressed concern about how diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives were being implemented at NICC and alleged certain board members were attempting to be overly involved in the day-to-day management of the college. NICC officials have asserted in previous statements that neither the college nor board members micromanaged Riedel or mismanaged the college. The board's stated reason for voting to terminate Riedel's contract include failure to make satisfactory improvements in areas identified on the performance action plan, such as building and sustaining trust with staff and improving communication and bonds with community partners. Speaking with the Telegraph Herald on Tuesday, Riedel asserted that faculty support for his leadership is widespread and described NICC's faculty as professional and extremely well qualified. To me, it's really meaningful that the faculty signed the statement of confidence because they care about the future of the college and they expressed their trust in me and felt that I was providing good leadership and moving the college in the right direction, Riedel said. He characterized the board's actions in voting to terminate his contract as, quote, rash and unwise, claiming many NICC employees now feel at a loss for supportive leadership. The hearing on Riedel's termination is scheduled for Monday, March 25th through Wednesday, March 27th in Des Moines and will take place before an administrative law judge. Riedel said he believes the faculty statement of confidence will be meaningful as the judge considers whether there was just cause for his termination. I think it will help the judge see that whatever the other side is saying, the majority of the faculty are supportive of me, trust me, and feel that I had a good relationship with them, he said. The next story is titled, Lead Pipe Removal Program Gets Boost, by Andy Piper. Taking advantage of substantial federal investment through 2021 bipartisan infrastructure law, the city of Dubuque soon will begin replacing lead water service lines at 585 homes at no cost to the property owners. The city acquired funding through the Iowa State Revolving Fund as part of the $50 billion directed to the Environmental Protection Agency to improve the nation's drinking water and wastewater systems. It is the single largest federal investment in clean water in U.S. history. This is one of the moments in history when we're going to have opportunities that we've never seen, Mayor Brad Kavanaugh said. I am so thankful that we are moving forward as a city in the way that we are so that we can help people that need it the most and are choosing to create a program like this. Water Department Director Christopher Lester said the project will proceed in three phases. 200 lines will be replaced in 2024, 200 in 2025, and the remaining 185 in 2026. The state revolving fund loan the city acquired is 49% forgivable, with the city of Dubuque repaying the other 51% at zero interest and with a 0.5% administrative fee required by the state to manage the fund. Lester estimated a cost of $10,000 to $12,000 per project, or roughly $3.2 million for the city to repay. The repayment of the loan will come through water fees and is already built into the budget. Originally, we thought the loan was going to be 90% forgivable, but the Department of Natural Resources was not able to find additional funding, Lester said. We ended up with 49% forgivable and the 585 participants because that's what we could afford. We didn't want to make it harder for people to pay their water bills. Based on socioeconomic criteria associated with the loan, the city surveyed census tracts to determine what areas of town fit the requirements. An area running from Central Avenue to Elm Street and from 14th Street to just north of West 32nd Street was the first area targeted. Mailings and follow-up calls were made, but the water department remained short of 585 participants. Last week, the department targeted an area flanked by West 32nd, Windsor Avenue, and out of the Point area. As of Tuesday, the number of interested participants jumped to about 900. Right now, we're operating on a first-come, first-served basis, Lester said. The funding doesn't set up measures about who is to select. The word is spreading, and the interest is definitely there now. Councilmember Danny Sprank lives in one of the census tracts under review, and he has lead service lines leading to his home. "I'm knocking on wood that it doesn't break," Sprank said. "It is over 100 years old, and I know many of my neighbors are concerned about the age of their lines. We know that the water treatment plant is treating the water, and the lines are not affecting us, but it is a ticking time bomb as we look forward." Lester said the city takes part in a optimized corrosion control, which uses an additive to the water to prevent the pipes from corroding and having the lead leach into the water. That makes any current risk from lead service lines minimal. "We can mitigate that potential, but the long-term solution is to remove the lines," Lester said. Lead piping is considered a health risk because once pipe corrosion occurs and lead-contaminated water is consumed, there are often spikes in premature birth, increased blood pressure, and anemia. No safe level of lead exposure has been identified, and it is especially harmful to children and pregnant women. Lester said the program represents about 10% of the city's 5,756 lead service lines. "We do plan to pursue additional funding that will support lead service line replacement," Lester said. The department is finalizing its list of participants and is awaiting environmental approval from the DNR before putting the project out for bids. "I am optimistic we can start work by midsummer," Lester said. This story is titled "Event Spotlights Dubuque Partnerships, Dateline Des Moines," by Benjamin Fisher. Dubuque area business and local government leaders gathered in the state capitol on Tuesday to check in on bills that could affect their interests, even as partisan and interparty disputes come in waves this session. Ahead of and during the Dubuque Area Chamber of Commerce's annual Dubuque Night in Des Moines, lawmakers discussed ways that members of the two major parties and two chambers in the legislature have worked together, if inconsistently, toward priorities set out by business and local government leaders ahead of the 2024 legislative session. Ahead of the session, local leaders prioritized workforce development and retention, a business-friendly tax environment, protecting incentives local governments use for development and bolstering the education system. Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Molly Grover said it was early yet to know how productive the session would be toward chamber goals, but that Dubuque Night was a good way to influence progress. "We still have to see how everything works out," she said. "It is a unique session, but we appreciate all the work of our lawmakers, and people continue to really like this event. It really demonstrates the level of partnership we have with the community." Dubuque Mayor Brad Kavanaugh said at the event that it is the partnerships, even across ideological divides, that make Dubuque an effective community at advocating for its interests. "The partnerships we make at all levels of government and the relationships are critical," he said. "It's an old-school form of politics in a time when people think politics has to be a dirty word. But I don't think of it that way. As much as it is difficult because we all have different opinions, it's important that we have moments like this where we are able to act like people." Democratic and Republican lawmakers representing Dubuque County met with the 2024 class of the Chamber of Commerce's Leadership Dubuque program throughout the day to explain the state legislative process and where the House and Senate were at this point in the session. Iowa Representative Shannon Lundgren, Republican of Piasta, stressed the collaborative work the legislature's Dubuque County delegation has been able to complete in recent years, even across party lines, while Republicans continue to control both chambers and the governor's seat. "I think we are probably the best in the state at working together across the aisle and truly collaborating," she said. "We don't have to agree politically about things, but we do care deeply about our local communities. And it is true that most of our bills are passed bipartisan." Dubuque Democratic Iowa Representatives Chuck Eisenhardt and Lindsey James and Iowa Senator Pam Jockum met with the Leadership Dubuque group together. While they agreed there is a sense of cooperation with some Dubuque area Republicans Jockum mentioned the historic preservation tax credit and flood mitigation work, such as the Bee Branch Watershed Flood Mitigation Project. They also said life in Des Moines is not as flowery as Republicans might want to convey. "We agree on bills that are common sense and make smaller changes," James said. "But on the bills that matter, on those that people are invested in, we are fiercely divided as a legislature. The balance between bipartisan support for less flashy bills and controversy over more partisan fights was on display Tuesday in Des Moines. Lundgren managed a bill that would allow craft alcohol to be sold at special events. "This will free our businesses to take advantage of days like farmers markets and festivals," she said on the floor of the House of Representatives. The bill passed unanimously. Later that day, the House debated and then passed a bill to make a state crime the entrance or attempted entrance of undocumented immigrants into Iowa if they previously have been found guilty of a crime, with some exceptions. It passed largely along party lines, with Republicans in favor and Democrats against it. At the Dubuque night event later in the day, Emily Valentine, an employee at DuPaco Community Credit Union and Leadership Dubuque participant, said she was interested in how differently the majority and minority lawmakers felt about the process. Dubuque financial advisor and Leadership Dubuque participant Sherry Bierman said that, especially given the partisan divide, she was inspired by the encouragement from area lawmakers for constituents to reach out to their legislators about topics that are meaningful to them. "One voice, it seems like, really can make a big difference," she said. "The challenge is just to find something you are really passionate about and advocate for that. Staying silent will just make you disappointed." Also on the front page is a big picture of the Foundry's formation, and it shows crews as they move large amounts of dirt during A.Y. McDonald's ongoing project to build a 360,000-square-foot brass foundry in Dickeyville, Wisconsin. The Dickeyville Foundry will be the fourth foundry built in the company's 167-year history and its first in Wisconsin. Officials broke ground on the project last year. Now turning to page 2, the Dubuque and Tri-State page. At the top is the story titled, "New Platteville Domestic Violence Shelter Offers a Healthy and Healing Environment," by Grace Neeland, Dateline, Platteville, Wisconsin. As employees and residents of a Platteville domestic violence shelter move into their new space, shelter staff are focused on creating an improved space to heal. Family advocates this month began their move to a new 14,000-square-foot building at 305 East Side Road. The organization serves victims of domestic and sexual violence at Grant, Lafayette, and Iowa counties. The new 10-bedroom building will replace the nonprofit's former shelter on Platteville's Court Street, which had 7 bedrooms and less than 4,000 square feet of space. The move recently began with the relocation of administrative offices, and shelter residents are expected to move in as early as this week. "At the old place, we really were just on top of each other all the time. There was no real solitude, which is something you need to really heal," said Family Advocates Executive Director Darlene Masters. "Here, we can really spread out and create that healing space." Family Advocates broke ground on the new building last May. The $3.6 million project was funded in large part by a $3.5 million federal grant awarded to the City of Platteville in 2022. Platteville City Manager Clint Langrick explained that the grant was awarded for the shelter project, so the city acted as a sort of municipal in-between that received the money and funneled it toward Family Advocates. The remainder of the funding was raised through charitable donations. "We're excited about the opportunities this brings for Family Advocates, and we're glad we were able to help with that grant acquisition," Langrick said. "It will be great to watch how they grow in the new shelter space." In 2013, a total of 112 people stayed at Family Advocates Court Street Shelter. Due to capacity constraints, 289 additional requests were declined. While the new space will not fully meet that backlog, Master said, "It's a start. We know this isn't going to get rid of our waitlist completely, But that's the same issue you'll find at shelters nationwide, Masters said. In addition to the extra bedrooms, the new shelter space also is equipped with additional kitchen and living room space, as well as a new exercise area and a quiet room. The shelter's storage capacity also is greatly expanded. Throughout the new building, the walls are painted in shades of purple, teal, and blue, the colors for the fight against domestic abuse, sexual abuse, and child abuse, respectively. Decorations were hand-picked by the staff to add an upbeat, personal touch. "We want it to be homey," Master says. "We're doing our best that we can make it to feel like a home, not just a building, because that's really what it's all about, offering the people we serve a healthy, healing environment." And then we have the news in brief column, Dubuque City Council members selected to FCC Advisory Committee. Dubuque City Council member Susan Farber was named to the Federal Communications Commission's Intergovernmental Advisory Committee. The committee provides guidance and recommendations to the FCC on telecommunications issues impacting local, county, state, and tribal governments, a press release states. Farber will be one of 30 committee members representing 20 states and the District of Columbia. "I am deeply honored to join the FCC's Intergovernmental Advisory Committee and am eager to contribute to shaping telecommunications policies that benefit communities nationwide," Farber said in the release. "I look forward to collaborating with fellow members and providing valuable insights from the local level." The committee makes recommendations to the FCC related to deployment and adoption of broadband services. It also will offer input on how the Commission's rules and policies can be better communicated to the public, the release states. The committee will hold its first meeting April 18th, and members will serve two-year terms. Man sentenced for conspiring to distribute drugs in Dubuque. An Illinois man was sentenced to more than 34 years in federal prison for conspiring to distribute methamphetamine and heroin in Dubuque. Michael G. Denson, 34, recently was given the sentence in U.S. District Court in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, after a jury last year found him guilty of one count of conspiracy to distribute methamphetamine and heroin and one count of possession with the intent to distribute heroin, according to a press release from the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Northern District of Iowa. U.S. District Court Chief Judge C.J. Williams ordered the prison sentence of 419 months and 18 days. Denson also must serve 5 years of supervised release following his prison sentence. There is no parole in the federal system. The release states that evidence at trial showed Denson was a methamphetamine and heroin dealer in the Dubuque area, nicknamed Ice Mike. Between February 2018 and February 2020, Denson conspired with others to distribute methamphetamine and heroin in Dubuque and Cedar Rapids, the release states. Authorities observed Denson outside a Dubuque hotel on July 23, 2019, when he had an outstanding warrant for his arrest, according to the release. Authorities stopped a car in which he was a passenger, and Denson got out of the passenger side of the car and ran from investigators, the release states. During a subsequent search of the vehicle, investigators located six small baggies containing heroin near where Denson had been seated, the release states. Now the police report. The Dubuque Police and Dubuque County Sheriff's Departments reported the following. Jordan E. Wild, 26, of 401 Central Avenue, number 2, was arrested at 2:52 a.m. Tuesday in the 500 block of West Locust Street on charges of third offense, operating while intoxicated, and driving while revoked. Charles D. Cole, 28, no permanent address, was arrested at 1:54 a.m. Tuesday in the 2400 block of Windsor Avenue on a charge of violation of a no-contact order and a warrant charging first-degree harassment. Nathan J. Johnson, 21, of 757 West 3rd Street, number A, was arrested at 11:11 p.m. Monday at his residence on charges of domestic assault with strangulation and domestic assault with injury. Susan M. Weber, 68, of 535 South Grandview Avenue, was arrested at 9:04 p.m. Monday at her residence on a charge of domestic assault. John D. Bliley, 59, of Asbury, Iowa, was arrested at 2:47 p.m. Monday in the 300 block of Bell Street on a charge of possession of methamphetamine. Regina M. Price, 45, of Decorah, Iowa, was arrested at 10:15 a.m. Monday at Dubuque Law Enforcement Center on a charge of possession of methamphetamine. And the theft of a vehicle worth $18,000 was reported at 9:51 a.m. Friday from the 10,000 block of Aviation Drive. And more news in brief from page 5. JDCF announces conservation award winners and plans for annual meeting in April. Dateline Galena, Illinois. A Joe Davies County couple known for their work in restoring local native prairies recently were announced as recipients of an annual Joe Davies Conservation Foundation Award. Jim and Ricky Rauschy received the 2024 Nancy Hamill Winter Conservation Leadership Award, according to a press release. The release states that the Rauschys were principal founders of Northwest Illinois Prairie Enthusiasts, a local chapter of the Prairie Enthusiasts, in 1993. Both have served in various leadership roles with the organization since then. The couple also have established two preserves in Hanover and Stockton, Illinois, now owned by the Prairie Enthusiasts. Additionally, they have permanently protected over 100 acres of Joe Davies County forest and prairie habitat that they own, led efforts to restore over 1,500 acres of prairie and savanna, and created native seed and rare plant conservation programs. The Rauschys will be honored at JDCF's annual meeting from 4 to 6:30 p.m. April 11th at Woodbine Bend Golf Course and Restaurant, 3500 East Center Road in Stockton, according to a press release. The event, which is open to the public, will include a social hour with heavy appetizers prior to a short business meeting. Kurt Main, a Sauk County, Wisconsin conservation biologist, environmental historian, and writer, will deliver the keynote speech. The cost to attend the annual meeting is $40 per person, and RSVPs are required by contacting info@jdcf.org by April 1st. Registrations open for Platteville Summer Recreation Programming, Platteville, Wisconsin. Registrations have opened for summer programming administered by Platteville's Park and Recreation Department. The registrations include swimming lessons, according to an online announcement. Visit platteville.org recreation or email recreation@platteville.org or call 608-348-9741 for more information. And youth welding course to be held in Manchester. Dateline Manchester, Iowa. A two-day course at a local community college will introduce 6th through 8th grade students to welding. Northeast Iowa Community College's Manchester Center will offer the youth welding course from 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, March 26th and March 28th at 605 North New Street. Attendance at the safety orientation on the first day of class is mandatory. Tuition costs $75. Visit nicc.edu or call the Manchester Center at 844-642-2338. For more information, you are listening to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Wednesday, March 20th, 2024, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Next, we'll turn to today's obituaries. C. Patrick Smith. C. Patrick Smith, 85, of Dubuque, Iowa, formerly of Epworth, Iowa, passed away Thursday, March 14th, 2024. At the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics in Iowa City, surrounded by his loving family. Visitation for Pat will be held from 3 to 8 p.m. on Friday, March 22, 2024, at the Rife Funeral Home in Epworth, where a prayer service will be held at 7:30 p.m. Visitation will also be held after 9 a.m. on Saturday at the funeral home. Services for Pat will be held 11 a.m. on Saturday, March 23rd, 2024, at St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Epworth, Iowa, with the Reverend Michael Schuler presiding. Burial will be held in St. Patrick's Cemetery in Epworth, Iowa. George W. Hoppenjan, Keeler, Wisconsin. George W. Hoppenjan, 79, of Keeler, died on Monday, March 18, 2024. Visitation will be held from 3 to 7 p.m. Friday, March 22, and from 9 to 10:15 a.m. Saturday, March 23, at Immaculate Conception Church Parish Center in Keeler. Massive Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, March 23, at the church. Burial will be in St. Rose of Lima Cemetery in Cuba City. Casey McNett Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Cuba City is assisting the family. Stephen H. Sprinke, Montfort, Wisconsin. Stephen H. Sprinke, 87, of Montfort, died on Sunday, March 17, 2024. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, March 22, at Soman Larson Funeral Home in Montfort, and from 9 to 10 a.m. Saturday, March 23, at St. Thomas Catholic Church in Montfort, where a memorial mass will follow. Sally A. Ritchie, Savannah, Illinois. Sally A. Ritchie, 90, of Savannah, died on Monday, March 18, 2024. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, March 22, at Law Jones Funeral Home in Savannah. Services will be held at 9 a.m. Saturday, March 23, at St. John the Baptist Catholic Church in Savannah. Burial will be in the church cemetery. Elaine M. Shaw, Springville, Iowa. Elaine M. Shaw, 77, of Springville and formerly of Dyersville, died on Monday, March 18, 2024. Visitation will be held from 3 to 8 p.m. Friday, March 22, at Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Marion, and from 9 to 10 a.m. Saturday, March 23, at St. Isidore Catholic Church in Springville, where a massive Christian burial will follow. Burial will follow at 3 p.m. at St. Patrick's Catholic Cemetery in Colesburg. Rosemary E. Kunster, Lancaster, Wisconsin. Rosemary Elaine Clark Yeager Kunster, age 91, a beloved wife, mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother, and Christian, passed away peacefully on Monday, March 18, 2024, at Grant Regional Health Center in Lancaster. Funeral services will be held on Friday, March 22, 2024, at 11 a.m. at the Lancaster United Methodist Church, with Pastor David Kim and Pastor Barbara Cook officiating. The burial will be in Hillside Cemetery, Lancaster. Family and friends may call on Thursday, March 21, 2024, from 4 p.m. until 8 p.m. at Martin Schwartz Funeral Home and Crematory in Lancaster, and on Friday from 10 a.m. until the time of services at Lancaster United Methodist Church. And funeral services, Amy L. Bainbridge, Galena, Illinois. Service, noon Saturday, April 13th, Furlong Funeral Chapel in Galena. David C. Fleur, East Dubuque, Illinois. Parish prayer service, 2:30 p.m. today, Miller Funeral Home, East Dubuque. Visitation, 3 to 7 p.m. today, and from 9:30 to 10:15 a.m. Thursday, March 21st, at the funeral home. Massive Christian burial, 11 a.m. Thursday, St. Mary's Church, East Dubuque. Joanne C. Garner, Dubuque. Service, 10 a.m. Friday, March 22nd, Egelhoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road. Barbara E. Gratz, Fenimore, Wisconsin. Visitation, 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, March 21st, Larson Funeral Home, Fenimore. And from 9:30 to 11 a.m. Friday, March 22nd, St. Peter Lutheran Church, Fenimore. Service, 11 a.m. Friday at the church. Robin G. Groom, Dickeyville, Wisconsin. Celebration of Life, 2 p.m. Saturday, March 23rd, PJ's Pub in Keeler. William J. Kirstein, Dubuque. Service, 1 p.m. Saturday, March 23rd, Veterans Memorial Plaza. Celebration of Life, following service, Nancy Slots in East Dubuque, Illinois. And Delbert J. Clemmie, Bellevue, Iowa. Celebration of Life, 5 to 8 p.m. Friday, March 22nd, Preston Town Hall. Vicki M. Myers, Dyersville, Iowa. Visitation, 10:30 to 12:30 p.m. today, Kramer Funeral Home, Dyersville. Service, 1 p.m. today, St. Francis Xavier Basilica, Dyersville. Richard Marburger, Cibola, Iowa. Visitation, 5 to 7 p.m. today, Law Jones Funeral Home, Savannah, Illinois. And from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Thursday, March 21st, Calvary Lutheran Church, Cibola. Service, 10:30 a.m. Thursday at the church. Mark A. Menson, Earlville, Iowa. Visitation, 2 to 8 p.m. today and from 9 to 10 a.m. Thursday, March 21st. Kramer Funeral Home, Dyersville. Service, 10:30 a.m. Thursday, St. Joseph Catholic Church. And Lewis J. Powell, Jr., Benton, Wisconsin. Service, 9 a.m. to noon Saturday, March 23rd. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. Now we turn to the sports page, and this story titled Loaded Resumes. The Telegraph Herald, All-Area Boys Wrestling Team by Tim O'Neill. It's tough to earn a spot on the Telegraph Herald All-Area Boys Wrestling Team. The 18 wrestlers selected to the first team combined to, on average, reach the third-place match at their respective state tournaments. Five won state championships, another two finished runners-up, and 11 of the 18 finished the season with a victory. All 18 stood on their state's medal stand. Here is the 2024 Telegraph Herald All-Area Wrestling Team, selected based on the state tournament finish and overall record. Lightweights. Elijah Hyatt, Dubuque Hempstead. Hyatt, a sophomore, made his state tournament debut and finished 8th at 106 pounds in Iowa Class 3A, finishing the season 31-10. Mitchell Pins, Dubuque Hempstead, a junior making his third state appearance. Pins finished the season 20-4 after placing 8th at 120 pounds in Iowa Class 3A. Brandon Mowry, West Delaware. A three-time Iowa State qualifier, Mowry went 38-6 and placed 6th at 120 pounds in Class 2A as a senior. Evan Bratton, Dubuque Hempstead, a two-time state qualifier, Brenton, went 40-9 as a junior and finished 6th at 126 pounds in Iowa Class 3A. Brock Morris, Cascade. The Iowa Class 1A state runner-up at 126 pounds, Morris went 47-7 while earning his second state medal as a junior. Ethan Aird, Darlington Blackhawk. Aird, a senior, finished 4th at 126 pounds in Wisconsin Division II, ending the season with a 41-5 record. Middleweights, Owen Seffred, Darlington Blackhawk, the Wisconsin Division II state champion at 144 pounds, Seffred finished his junior season with a perfect 49-0 record while earning his third state medal. Ian Crapp, Fenimore. Crapp capped a 31-6 senior season with the Wisconsin Division IV state championship at 144 pounds. Tristan Stelt, Fenimore. Stelt captured his second consecutive Wisconsin Division III state championship, finishing with a 43-4 record at 157 pounds as a junior. Siler Danzweski, Fenimore. Danzweski made his second consecutive state tournament appearance as a junior, placing 4th in Wisconsin Division III at 150 pounds with a 37-14 record. Dawson Fish, Dubuque Hempstead. A three-time Iowa State qualifier, Fish ended his senior season 38-10 and earned his first state medal by placing 8th at 157 pounds in Class 3A. Braylon Goble, Darlington Blackhawk. Goble, a senior, made his second Wisconsin State Tournament appearance and earned his first medal, posting a 46-4 record and placing 3rd at 157 pounds in Division III. And the upperweights. Colin Young, Dubuque Wallert. Young was one of just two area wrestlers to complete an undefeated season this year, posting a 20-0 record as a senior and winning Mississippi Valley Conference and Iowa Class 2A state championships at 165 pounds. Maddox Goble, Darlington Blackhawk. The two-time Wisconsin state qualifier went 29-5 as a junior this season, finishing 3rd at 165 pounds in Wisconsin Division II. Brent Yakovic, West Delaware. A three-time Iowa State qualifier, Yankovic went 42-3 and placed 3rd at 175 pounds in Iowa Class 2A as a junior. Nathan Betts, Maquoketa Valley. Betts, a two-time state qualifier, posted a 46-3 record and placed 3rd at 190 pounds in Iowa Class 1A as a junior. Brady Davis, Maquoketa Valley. The Iowa Class 1A state runner-up at 215 pounds, Davis was a three-time state qualifier who went 41-4 as a senior. Evan Gratz, Fenimore. Gratz won his second consecutive Wisconsin Division III state championship at 285 pounds, finishing his senior season with a 41-5 record. And special mention, Darlington Blackhawk, Ross Chris. Fenimore, Wyatt Onan. Maquoketa Valley, Aiden Sallow. Honorable mention, Bellevue, Jack Hilliard. Belmont Platteville, Dylan Weigel. Dubuque Hempstead, Landon Gottschalk, Mitchell Murphy, Cam Smith, Tate Woodruff, and Zach Conlon. Dubuque Wallert, Jaron Guile, Michael Borman. Galena, William Anderson. Fenimore, Nathan Blaschke. Maquoketa, Spencer Martin, and Jackson Van Curen. West Delaware, Lucas Peters, Jarrett Engel, Cooper Waugh, Jax Miller, and Blake Mather. And Western Dubuque, Kellen McKenna, Joe Hirsch, Drew Birds, and David Tyson. Now we have this story about prep baseball. SWC appears wide open by Jim Leitner. The Southwest Wisconsin Conference baseball race appears to be wide open this season, and both Platteville and Lancaster returned solid cores to make a move. Both teams finished around the break-even mark last spring and have multiple all-conference players returning. Prairie du Chien and Dodgeville also expect to be in the mix for a league title. Here is a capsule look at the area SWC teams. Platteville, coach Randy Knight, fifth season, 22-41 overall, last season. 10-11, 4-6 for third place in Southwest Conference. Returning starters, Riley Donahoe, Cam Key, Keegan Coffey, Davin Edge, Lucas Ludlam, Trent Mum, Jr., and Jonathan Vorwald, Jesse Key. Other returning letter winners are Nathan Mum, Dylan Weigel, Carson Opgenorth, Bryson Carl, and Seth Wilson. Promising newcomers, Garrison Tashner. Hillman, playing in college, Aiden Sparkman, and John Drefsinski. Outlook, the Hillman returned first-team All-Southwest Conference infielders Donahoe and Ludlam, along with second-teamers Trent Mum and Vorwald, and honorable mention pick Key. Edge also returns to the lineup from injury. The experience and chemistry will be a key factor in Platteville's success this spring. Lancaster, coach Brian Knapp, last season 13-11, 4-6 for fourth place in Southwest Conference. Returning starters, Logan Wolf, Colby Lull, Lance Reuter, Andrew Spurgeon, Connor Brewer, Tyler Timmerman, Shay Lucky, and Nolan Wolf. Other returning letter winners are Logan Muldoon, Devin Clark, Evan Beckwar, Vinny Ubersox, Brady McCartney, and John Clements. Promising newcomers, Tyler Fishneck, Braden Lenz, Brady Muldoon, Jackson Spiel, Lane Hendricks, Max Bodhuen, Will Krakachil, Wyatt McLean, and Aiden Spurgeon. Outlook, the Flying Arrows returned four all-conference selections in Logan Wolf, Ball, Lucky, and Nolan Wolf, as well as four others from last year's starting lineup. Pitching depth should be a strength for Lancaster this spring. Now we'll have the On the Air Today list. In Major League Baseball, the Dodgers versus the Padres from Seoul, South Korea. Time, 5 a.m. on ESPN. Spring training, Cubs at the Athletics at 3:05 p.m. on MARQ. In men's college basketball, the NCAA tournament, Grambling versus Montana State at 5:40 p.m. on True TV. In the NIT, St. Joseph's versus Seton Hall at 6 p.m. on ESPN2. And in the NIT also, VCU versus Villanova at 8 p.m. on ESPN2. And the NCAA tournament, Colorado versus Boise State, 8:10 p.m. on True TV. In women's college basketball, in the NCAA tournament, Presbyterian versus Sacred Heart at 6 p.m. on ESPNU. In the NCAA tournament, Columbia versus Vanderbilt at 8 p.m. on ESPNU. In NBA basketball, the Bucks at the Celtics, 6:30 p.m. on ESPN, and the Grizzlies at the Warriors at 9 p.m. on ESPN. And in NHL hockey, the Maple Leafs at the Capitals at 6:30 p.m. on TNT, and the Wild at the Kings at 9 p.m. on TNT. Next, we have this story by Jim Leitner. It's called Gallup Taking Detour. The popular road race will follow a different route because of Grandview Overpass Project. A long-awaited construction project will create a temporary detour for a popular road race late this spring. Due to construction on the South Grandview Overpass, the Grandview Gallup will follow a different path for this year's event, scheduled for Saturday, June 8th. The course will again start and end at Murphy Park, but the entire event will take place on the Mississippi River side of U.S. Highway 61 and 151. There will be no change in the course for the O'Connor and Thomas 1 Mile Youth Run, which starts at 7:30 a.m., and the 4 Mile Race Walk, which starts at 8 a.m., will be impacted by the closure of the bridge. A temporary course will follow a double loop starting at Murphy Park. The course begins by heading east on South Grandview and will loop around the new Mount Carmel Bluffs building. Participants will then exit the loop and proceed west on South Grandview past Murphy Park to Julian Dubuque Drive with a turnaround prior to the crest of the downhill section. Participants then return to the start line and repeat just the Mount Carmel loop to the Murphy Park finish line. The new course maintains the integrity of the 4 mile distance with minimum change in elevation. Work on the overpass will begin at 9 p.m. Thursday as crews prepare it for demolition. The $4.7 million bridge replacement will span the entire construction season and has a tentative reopening date of November 15th. Sign up for the road race is available at GrandviewGallup.com. The race packet pickup and pre-race day sign-up is from 4 to 8 p.m. on Friday, June 7th at Murphy Park. For more information, call Greg Hermiston at 563-599-5198 or Daryl Zmolik at 563-663-2458. And Wallert Hall of Fame ceremonies this weekend. Dubuque Wallert will induct 4 athletes and a veteran coach into its Athletic Hall of Fame this weekend. Trent Clemen, Mike Hilby, Maddie Niles, Rob Stoffel, and Cynthia Wagner will join the Hall of Fame on Saturday, March 23rd at the Best Western Plus on Dodge. The event is open to the public, and anyone interested in attending can contact the Wallert Activities Office for ticket information. Miracle League set to begin play in April. Registration is now open for the Miracle League in Dubuque's spring baseball season. Games will start on Saturday morning, April 20th, and run until Saturday morning, June 15th. Teams and game times will be determined by the number of participants. Players must register in order to be placed on a team. By registering, it doesn't mean a player has to commit every Saturday. Register at MiracleLeagueDubuque.com. Deadline for registration is Friday, April 12th. And trio to join Dubuque Bowling Hall of Fame. The Dubuque Area USBC Hall of Fame Committee will induct 3 new members during ceremonies this spring. Sheila Chapman, Marty Monson, and Dennis Pergand will all be recognized for their outstanding performance. The Hall of Fame dinner and induction ceremony will take place Tuesday, May 14th. More information and ticket sales information will be released in April. And now turning to the college notebook. Dash's Sheehan qualifies for NCAA meet by Jim Leitner. A dozen alumni of the Dubuque Area Swim and Hurricanes Club team competed at the collegiate level this summer, including 5 at the NCAA Division I level. Miriam Sheehan, a freshman at North Carolina State, competed at the Atlantic Coast Conference meet and earned a berth in this week's NCAA meet. Sheehan, who represented Puerto Rico at the 2021 Olympics in Tokyo, will swim the 100 backstroke at the NCAA meet. Her father, Jim, swam at Iowa State University. Anna Pfeiffer, a Western Dubuque senior who swam for Dubuque Senior, represented the University of Iowa at the Big Ten Championships. Colin Schuster, a Guttenberg, Iowa native who attended the Singapore American School, and his younger brother, Connor Schuster, swam for Northwestern at the Big Ten Championships. Colin is a senior, and Connor is in his first year. George Holsinger, a sophomore from Dubuque Hempstead, represented Missouri State University at the Mid-American Conference Championships. At the NCAA Division II level, Macy Buffelli swam for Minnesota State Mankato at the Northern Sun Intercollegiate Conference meet. She is a sophomore from Cascade, Iowa, who swam for Dubuque Senior. Senior grad Delaney Noel, a junior, represented Adelphi at the Northeast 10 Championships. At the NCAA Division III level, Zoe Heyer, a junior from Dubuque, Wallert, swam for Augustana at the Collegiate Conference of Illinois and Wisconsin meet. Jacob Wegner, a junior from West Delaware who swam at Hempstead, represented Luther College at the American Rivers Conference meet. Molly Strohmeyer, a junior from Senior, also competed at the ARC meet while representing Loras College. Molly Dewar, a senior from Hempstead, swam for St. Ambrose University at the NAIA National Meet. And Brady Noel, a sophomore from Senior, swam for Iowa Lakes at the NJCAA Championships. Ben Cullen, a senior grad who swam at the University of Iowa, serves as an assistant coach for the University of Northern Iowa. The Spartans, Elfring Fetid. The American Rivers Conference selected University of Dubuque junior Aiden Elfring as its baseball position player of the week. The Bird Island, Minnesota native posted a .538 batting average with two doubles and a home run over the three games. He drove in five runs and scored four as the Spartans improved 11-3. WIAC honors UWP's Ruffin. The Wisconsin Intercollegiate Athletic Conference named UW-Platteville junior right-hander Taylor Ruffin as its softball pitcher of the week. The Lake Mills, Wisconsin native went 5-0 on the week with an impressive .75 ERA across 28 innings of work for the Pioneers. She tossed three complete games and struck out 27 batters while allowing just 23 hits and five walks. Hemlund's ARC honor. The ARC selected Loras College junior Ashlyn Hem as its softball pitcher of the week. The Port Byron, Illinois native helped the Duhawks to a 9-1 record during their spring trip to Florida. She was in the circle for 25 innings, recording 26 strikeouts while only walking four and allowing only one earned run. Hem pitched a no-hitter against Rochester and had three complete games as Loras improved to 12-4. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Wednesday, March 20th, 2024. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thank you for listening. Thank you.
In Africa, 5-year-old Charu has no choice. She and millions like her must walk miles every day for dirty water. But together, we can end their walk by providing clean water close by. Instead of spending hours walking to get water that makes them sick, girls can be in a classroom that expands their minds, and moms will gain back time to care for their families. Sons and daughters can grow up strong, finally free of sicknesses caused by dirty water. At World Vision, care about clean water runs deep. Deep enough to reach one new person with clean water every 10 seconds. Because every child, every person, everywhere deserves clean water and the chance to rise to their full potential. It's true. When you just add water, you change a life. Learn more at worldvision.org.